Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy Martin Luther King Day. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. I'm with Jim Garrity of National Review, of course. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. And, Jim, we start with the good. The Clintons promised they were going to do this during the campaign when the whole Clinton Foundation scandal was bubbling up, but it looks like it's actually happening. This is courtesy of the Daily Caller by way of hot air. The Clinton Foundation announced it's laying off 22 staffers on the Clinton Global Initiative, keeping with a plan to deal with the negative spotlight put on the organization during former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. The layoffs will take effect April 15th, the Clinton Foundation said in a filing with the New York Department of Labor Thursday, citing the discontinuation of the Clinton Global Initiative. The move is part of a plan put in motion ahead of the presidential election in order to offset a storm of criticism regarding pay-to-play allegations during Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. And they also point out in the story that actually it turns out the donations have dried up a little bit since Hillary lost, and it was even drying up a little bit even before she lost. So, Jim, this giant scheme to enrich the Clintons is folding its tent. That's got to only be good news.
Yeah, now we should emphasize this is not the entire Clinton Foundation shutting down.
Correct.
This is simply the Clinton Global Initiative, which was the particularly international aspect of it. This was indeed one of the parts that was getting the most interaction with foreign governments and foreign companies. Now, by itself, does this is this an admission of guilt on the part of the Clintons? No, and it's worth noting that they did say back in November, well, one way or the other, we're going to shut it down. But they seemed to the when it looked like Hillary Clinton was going to win the presidency, it made a lot of sense to shut it down, because otherwise you had this, I'm making, you know, air quotes as I say this, perfectly legal way for foreign governments and foreign companies to put it, you know, money into an account controlled by the president of the United States, but that wasn't bribery. It totally wasn't bribery or any particular reason for that. Now, you understood why they wouldn't be able to continue it if Hillary won. But if she lost, Greg, why wouldn't they be able to continue it? If it wasn't a conflict of interest, or if it didn't represent bribery and corruption when she was Secretary of State and when she was a private citizen, why would they need to shut it down now? Hmm. And they never quite gave a particularly good explanation for that. However, shortly after the election came along, we found worse news from governments like Australia and Norway that they were either, in the case of Australia, ending their donations to the Clinton Foundation, and in the case of Norway, cutting it down drastically. Greg, around election day, did they run out of poor people in the world? did they run out of problems to solve? They, you know, the Clinton Global Initiative look around the world and say, well, our work here is done. Time to fold up our tent and go away. No, the world's the exact same. So the only thing that changed between earlier in the year and now, or let's say middle of 2016 and now, is that Hillary Clinton is no longer in a position to influence U.S. policy. And coincidentally enough, all of these foreign governments and foreign donors suddenly have much less interest in giving. Now, if they really were all about the mission, if Saudi Arabia were as committed to promoting women's rights as their donations to the Clinton Foundation suggested, then there's no reason for them to stop giving, unless the whole thing was an effort to basically buy friendship from the Clintons, a legalized form of bribery, a way to put money into an account controlled by the Clintons that, oh, by the way, covered their travel expenses. And through fancy soirees for them and Bono and Hollywood stars and moguls and you know, it's like Davos every day, Greg. It's one, you know, fantastic gala after another, all done allegedly in the name of good cause. But some of us looked at it rather warily, and the behavior of everybody since the election suggests that no, sure, I'm sure it did some charitable work, but that wasn't really what it was about. Greg, I didn't see the United Way closing up shop after the election, Doctors Without Borders, all of these other groups that are indisputably genuine charities that didn't suddenly say, ah, time to wrap it up after the election. So if you had a cynical viewpoint about the Clinton Foundation, you're feeling pretty pretty vindicated this morning.
I think so. I mean, does Bill Clinton not want to give speeches for 50,000, 75,000? I mean, obviously the rate would go down, but you'd think there'd be some lucrative nature left to this, but no, they're just folding the tent.
Greg, to me, is this just a good segue or a good way to transit to the ability to buy friendship and buy good policies from the next mayor of New York? Got to sell something at the Clinton Foundation.
So does shutting this down mean she's not going to do that? I have to have a hard time thinking she'd actually do it. But is this a pretty good sign that she's not?
Greg, for the sake of sowing dissent in Democratic Party circles, I am hereby endorsing Hillary Clinton for mayor of New York City. Not because I think she'd be good at the job. She'd probably be, no worse than de Blasio. But to me, the most important thing is, what can we do to get Democrats to hate each other more? And right now, nothing says that to me more than the slogan, America's loss is New York's gain. And just kind of picture the icon of the Statue of Liberty, but with Hillary's face imposed on it. I can see the posters now, Greg. So I think it is the responsibility of everybody on the right to do their part, to talk this up, to get Democrats, spitting mad at each other, and then abandon Hillary when it comes really convenient.
Well, especially in a race where Republicans have no hope anyway. So if that doesn't work out, maybe the 2018 New York governor's race. Who knows? Okay, on to the second martini, the bad martini. Jim, we've heard so many different examples of whining and complaining about everything from the Democratic side, from the Obama administration, Russia, FBI, Trump's racism, whatever the allegation is from the left. That's what really happened here. But the one thing we didn't get from the Democrats for the longest time was that the results were somehow illegitimate. The administration has said from department to department to department, nothing impacted the vote. The vote was not hacked. The machines were not hacked. The results are right. Well, now the Democrats have decided that since we're less than a week away from Inauguration Day for Donald Trump, that he is in fact illegitimate. Leading the charge, Georgia Congressman and civil rights hero John Lewis with Chuck Todd on MSNBC.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
You do not consider him a legitimate president. Why is that?
I think the Russians participated in helping this man get elected. Mm-hmm. And they helped destroy the candidacy of Hillary Clinton.
Brian Fallon was the communications director for the Clinton campaign. He was on CNN after Trump tweeted some less than charitable things about the intelligence community. And here's what Fallon said.
Well, I think those tweets are just the latest indication that Donald Trump is someone who's very insecure in his victory. And I understand why. Every day there are new developments, new shoes dropping, so to speak, that call into question the legitimacy of his win.
So the L word is all over the place. Dianne Feinstein not going quite as far on Sunday, saying that she believes Russia's attempt to interfere in the United States presidential election had an impact on the ultimate outcome. Jim, it's weird that they're going for the Russia thing because the hacks were out there for weeks and weeks and months, and yet the polling never seemed to hurt Hillary Clinton. But then all of a sudden that she actually lost, then it's all Russia's fault.
Greg, wasn't this considered like the most dangerous thing you could possibly do in democracy?
Yes.
Right before the election, right? Like Trump was saying, well, maybe I'll concede if I think it's fair. The insinuating is that he felt like if there was fraud or something, he was going to he was going to contest the election or something, but people were tearing their hair out over this. And now here is John Lewis doing exactly that. Now, you can argue, because of the Russian hacking. Well, wait a second. The Russians hacked the DNC. The Russians hacked Podesta. They put out embarrassing information out there. You kept hearing a lot of phrases about election hacking. And at this point, at least according to that last poll we saw, 52% of Democrats believe that the vote totals were hacked by the Russian government. No, that's not true. That is false. And it says something about Democrats that they choose to answer a pollster this way. Why have they chosen to believe it? Well, because it's the explanation that lets themselves off the hook. If it was bold as nefarious, Vladimir Putin going in there and altering the vote totals, then they actually won. It's not their fault. I really kind of want to know what John Lewis thinks is the proper course of action now, if he genuinely truly believes that Donald Trump is an illegitimate president, that the election has been that there's been the effect of a equivalent of a Russian-funded coup in this country. Is it time to take up arms and begin the insurrection? Right? Is it time for secession for the blue states? What do you do in response to something like this? I assume he would say, The proper course of action is impeachment. You know what? He's a member of the House. He's perfectly free to do that. And if he wants to introduce legislation to impeach President Donald Trump on January 21st, he is free to do that. I do not think that will turn out well for him. I do not think that is where the public buys into what the public is on this. I don't think that for whatever – I don't even think a lot of Trump critics want to go here and say this. The election results are the election results. Everyone involved in the election certified them. Every election official, Democrats, Republicans, everybody went and said, look, this is how it turned out. You can complain that the Electoral College is unfair, but that is the rules we operated under. You can argue that the WikiLeaks hacking wasn't nice and wasn't fair. Do you know who knows what it feels like to run a campaign when things going on aren't fair?
Who's
Mitt
that?
Romney, John McCain, right? You could probably argue John Kerry, but every candidate that loses thinks the election was unfair in some way, that they didn't have some advantage or level playing field that they deserved. But you know what? This is how it happens, right? I'm sure, by the way, in a lot of Republicans' eyes, WikiLeaks hacking into DNC and Podesta's emails is balancing out the unfairness of the national media. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. I don't like the idea of saying, well, because someone is behaving inappropriately, crimes are justified. I don't think we need to go that far. Having said that, if you want to know why people are kind of shrugging at the thought of WikiLeaks hacking into the DNC, it's because they feel like the media has been completely one-sided for a really long time. If we had a more even-handed, objective media, or let's not even say objective, let's say a more even-handed and fair media that, you know, that covered both sides with equal levels of skepticism, with equal levels of scrutiny, then you'd have the public reacting very differently to this. And part of that reaction would be when John Lewis says he is an illegitimate president, the media would say, no, there is no evidence to support that. But we don't have that, so that's where we are. It feels like it's a vicious cycle that will endlessly continue. I see that a good chunk of House Democrats are saying they're going to stay home from the inauguration. It's a free country. They're free to do that. But Greg, you know, the next time we have a Democratic president elected, how many House Republicans do you think are going to stay home? I bet it's going to be more than a few.
Well, it's like you said, one of the things that's going to be the legacy of this election is that no matter who loses from this point out, you're going to get pretty big chunks of the electorate who think the results are illegitimate. That's what gets spawned from this. This is reminiscent, obviously, of 2000 when a lot of Democrats thought Bush or the Supreme Court or whatever stole the election away from Al Gore. It was actually the Electoral College, which is, you know, like you said, what the election was based on. There's always an excuse and a growing excuse and more people who will believe it every time somebody loses now, and that's not healthy. Speaking of unhealthy, let's go to the crazy martini today. And Jim, there's a website called The Verge. I don't know a lot about it. Most of their stories seem to be tech-related and don't seem to be super crazy, but apparently their movie review section is. The new movie Patriots Day is out. It's basically a look at the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. And the way this reviewer goes after it, first of all, it seems like a personal vendetta against the director as well as Mark Wahlberg, who is the star of the film. But it also is just sneeringly dismissive of things that we find good in America. Let's use just a couple paragraphs of an exceedingly long review. First, quote, "It's not interested," meaning the movie, "in examining the complications of relying on travesty and violence to build community. And it's certainly not concerned with what has become a sinister pattern of romanticizing and exploiting resilience. What it wants to do mostly is give us another Wahlberg hero, another unassuming white guy who reveals himself in the worst of moments to be exceptional. What an interesting year to argue that a white man is likely to be the person who will save you." And then at the very end, "Watching Patriots Day in a crowded theater in Lower Manhattan, it was bizarre how well the script broke for applause. This movie caters to a jingoism that the political right has spent the last 8 years defending from the withering gaze of an incredibly enlightened president. But even New Yorkers found it in themselves to cheer for what is now the winning team." So many other quotes she talks about. The reviewer here is Caitlin Tiffany, that terrorism isn't this new reality that Peter Berg thinks that it is and so forth. Jim, my question is, who are we supposed to be cheering for in this movie?
Indeed, Greg, I think this movie didn't have enough moral nuance in its discussion of the bomber and the 10-year-old who he put a bomb next to at the Boston Marathon. This is what happens when you see absolutely everything in life through a political lens. And not only that, I think also, you know, when they talk about the sneering at the, you know, another movie with a white male saving the day. Greg, what did this reviewer think of Captain America: Civil War?
I don't know.
Elsewhere in the review, the complaint is that cops cheered the cops in the movie, which I like, not only am I not surprised by that, I really have a hard time, never mind getting outraged or bothered by it. Imagine, like, seeing that and being surprised that cops cheered a heroic depiction of cops on a movie screen. What, did you expect him to boo? Stop portraying us so positively. We're terrible. You know what? How did this reviewer expect this this audience to respond? This is a, you know, it's the year is young, but maybe it's the worst review of the entire year. The way in which politics seeps into our discussion of the arts and discussion of things that aren't supposed to be inherently political. Director Peter Burr, you know, I haven't seen the movie. I don't know if it's particularly good. But it seems like it's trying to be sort of a docudrama, straightforward telling of what happened in Boston, which, by the way, is one of the reasons I think I'm less than fully enthused about seeing it, because I don't know if I need to see a movie like this, Greg, because we the whole country just lived it a few years ago.
Right.
It was only 2013. But hey, you know, they want to dramatize it. Fine. But the idea of just getting this irate about it and this upset about it, and the idea of, you know, only being able to see Mark Wahlberg as a white male. I mean, Greg, do you know how a more sophisticated, I would argue, mature mind sees Mark Wahlberg in his acting today?
How's that?
It's Mark Mark. I guess I have to be a particular age to appreciate that. So anyway, yeah. So again, don't get your – what was it? What was it? Blender, you said it was, or
The Verge?
The Verge. Okay. A lot of these, you know, web-only institutions that are, you know, like it's always pop. Blend, Verge, bleep, flop, you know. Now I sound like Bill Cosby. Anyway, on that happy note, I would just say, look, don't turn to that site for your movie reviews. Don't look at all of life through the social justice warrior lens. Just agree, and if it's, say it's a good movie, it's a good movie. If it's a bad movie, it's a bad movie. But don't be shocked by cops enjoying watching movies in which cops are portrayed heroically. Because I know this is going to stun you, but everybody thinks they're the real hero of their own life story. Including self-absorbed movie reviewers.
Excellent punctuation, Mark. Jim, have a good day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.